Welcome, everybody, to a Baseball America podcast, action-packed podcast today. I'm John Manuel, along with Matt Eddy, and we also joined later in the show. We'll play an interview I did with Cody Decker, Padres farmhand, Team Israel player in the recent World Baseball Classic, and a guy who we've hated on over the years. Specifically, I apparently have hated on at Baseball America, which I didn't even remember, but now we have evidence to prove that I hated on Cody Decker. So we'll talk a little bit about that and the World Baseball Classic later this in this podcast. But Matt and I are going to talk about it's prospect season, Matt. It's the dawn of prospect season. We just finished our league top 20 prospects issue. The magazine has a list of 20 scouting reports for 10 prospects in each league in organized baseball, plus, of course, J.J. Cooper's exhaustive indie ball coverage. And now online, we go 20 deep, you get a chat. So for 3 weeks in a row, basically, 15 days in a row, you get league top 20 and a chat every day at Baseball America. I don't know of any other website that approaches that, for other sports, Matt, that does the kind of this is just if you're a Baseball America subscriber, you're getting your money's worth the next 3 weeks. So we like this time of year, but it's a labor-intensive thing to do, and takes a lot of phone calls. And Matt, you happen to be our only staffer this year who did two leagues. So Appalachian League, which is already online, we can talk about that thoroughly, and we're going to get into a little
Spoilers.
League history. Yep. And then the Eastern League, we don't want to spoil yet, and I did the International League this year, which was a mistake. I shouldn't have done that. Not a good league this year, the International League, but it was, I guess I kind of pulled a little rank and gave myself an easier league to do because I saw those guys in Durham this year and talked to scouts while I was doing Bulls games and all that good stuff.
It'll be better next year.
I would hope so. I would definitely hope so. But just first, you know, Matt, I'm trying to think of if I've ever done, I know I did the Arizona League 1 year. I'm pretty sure I've done a short season league, but it's been a while. But how different is it for you this year, especially doing the Eastern League, which you had never done before? That's my old stomping grounds. And then the Appy League, which you've done for several years. Kind of how do you approach those two leagues differently?
The lower down, you go into the minors, such as the Appalachian League, which is really the first traveling rookie league.
Right.
The lower down you go, the more emphasis I think everybody places on the tools and the projection and the profile and the role this player may fill in the future, de-emphasizing the statistics, especially
right.
when compared with AA and AAA.
And it's so hard to the thing is, like, the first time you have your league assignment and when you first start diving into it, the first thing you do, especially even in a rookie league, but especially in an upper level league, is you go through the stats. You know, you go for me, I go into the minor league baseball, the backdoor site, where you pay a lot of money to get these stats and to have this access to the backdoor. And I go on the team statistics, all players, everyone who's been called up, sent down, whatever. And I go and I just comb through that entire file for every single team and take a lot of notes for my prep file. That's the first thing I do. But I, as a rookie level, like in the Appy League, I know you do some of that because I've seen the spreadsheets and they're awesome. But at some point, do you, like, I guess, what grabs your eye statistically? What does a guy have to do statistically at the Appy League level to grab your eye?
I think it's probably similar to what scouts look for at tryouts or when they scout players who are their skills are still immature. They look for the power elements, pitchers who can miss bats, batters who can, hit home runs and hit extra base hits. Make contact with the ball. All those are all important things.
Right.
The first step I do is I look at draft status, and if we have bonus information, I just look at that to see who
right.
the guys who are supposed to be guys are.
That's right. That's priority guy. That's how organizations line them up.
Yeah.
So be realistic. So we definitely take our cues from that. And I think we actually take our cues from that less than we used to because I remember
mm-hmm.
ranking players only because they've gotten large signing bonuses, and even though the tools didn't sound all that special in the past. But I think we do have a more discerning eye these days, but that's still a place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think especially with international players, we've come to see how illogical some of those bonuses line up with the actual talent levels.
Absolutely. I'll never forget that column that Jim did on the top 100 where all the lowest-priced players on the top 100 were like Ruby De La Rosa and Michael Pineda, and they combined for less than $50,000 in signing bonus.
Yep.
And who knows if any of those have been skimmed, too. I mean, you know, when you really think about it, it was pretty eye-opening to see Ruby De La Rosa with his $15,000 signing bonus on the same top 100 as, like, I don't know, Bryce Harper, you know, and all the money he'd gotten. But like you said, it seemed like those lists over the years have been I mean, we do a 5 years ago chart with every one of those top 20s, and the Abbey League lists are some of the funnest ones. At the same time, they're the ones that have the fewest asterisks.
Oh yeah.
It's logical that your rookie level top 20 would have fewer graduates because there's so much distance between what those players are when they're in rookie league and what they're going to be in a major league. There's so much projection. What are some of the greatest hits and misses of the Matt Eddy tenure? You've been doing you've done this league every year since what, 06?
Every year since 05, save for 07, which was kind of probably the low water mark for the league.
So we stuck it with Nathan Rody. No offense to Nathan. Speaking of low water mark, Nathan's scuba diving this week in the Dry Tortugas.
Fitting.
Can you just tell me about it exactly?
Well, there's three big leaguers on the 07 list. Neftali Feliz, Jeff Locke, and Brandon Hicks.
That's still, and Jeff Locke still without a major league win right now.
And Pete Kozma. Feliz, of course, a rookie of the year and a two-time pennant winner. But aside from that, it's not...
And
not very exciting.
An impactful player, certainly, Neftali Feliz, but kind of his career's future, I think, is a little bit up in the air. Tommy John, most guys come back from Tommy John, but not all. Especially a guy who doesn't have a ton of feel anyway. Jeff Locke, who hasn't won a Major League game yet, but is in your International League top 10 this year.
Ooh.
So there's a little tease for you. And, of course, that league's list had one of my all-time personal cheese balls, and Cole Rohrbaugh. I loved Cole Rohrbaugh. Written about him in junior college at Western Nevada that year in the draft. And he's a guy who, like you said, he missed a ton of bats. And he got a decent amount of money that year as a draft and follow. I think it was the last draft and follow class, and he got, like, $300,000. He missed a lot of bats. You had a guy down there, your number 10 prospect that year, Mike McCardle, was a guy who missed a lot of bats. Now, granted, it was with a breaking ball. I think that's one of the things that you have, Matt. In lower levels, it seems like a pitcher who comes in with an advanced breaking ball can really seem like more of a prospect than he is, because if you have a good breaking ball at lower levels, you're going to get a lot of strikeouts.
That's an excellent point. And probably the case in point, you know, the case study for this year's class would be Osuna, Roberto Osuna of the Blue Jays, the 17-year-old Mexican right-hander.
Nephew of Antonio, correct?
Yep. Who did balloon out as he... accrued experience, but he started pretty skinny. But what's his face here?
Yeah, Roberto.
Roberto is 270 pounds already.
Oh my gosh!
Or 230. Sorry, but
still, he's on the Bruce Rondon business plan.
He's gigantic. But he has a very advanced changeup, which, you know, the hitters at that level are swinging at the arm speed. You know, if you can get it in the zone consistently, they're going to swing at it.
That's an important point. Again, going back to that list from 5 years ago, there's Bradley Tippett of the Angels, who had a great changeup. Still some hope for some players on that list, like Luke Van Mill. Has he been to the big leagues or no?
He's been on a 40-man, but he's
not
been
on a 40-man. David Bromberg in the Twin System, I think, is still kicking around. And Cody Johnson. Didn't you get some reports on Cody Johnson even in the Eastern League this year with Trenton?
The Yankees have a decision to make. It's his minor league free agent year if he's not on the 40-man. So.
And that guy still has as much power. We still get tons of scouting reports on that guy's power. Like, man, Cody Johnson just lost one. So that's your 5 years ago list. Let's talk a little bit about this year's list, Matt, because the guys at the top of your list didn't necessarily put up the biggest stats, even in the power stats. But Byron Buxton, Courtney Hawkins, Bubba Starling, your 1-2-3. And then, of course, there's a Rays left-handed pitcher in here somewhere. That's a tradition unlike any other, it seems like, in the Appalachian League. But let's start at the top. Buxton, Hawkins, and Starling. I think we've talked about on a podcast seeing Starling and Buxton play in that playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
But Courtney Hawkins kind of gets almost forgotten a little bit in there. And he had about as good a pro debut. He had a great draft year. Big spring. Gets on TV. Does the flip. So everybody knows Courtney Hawkins. And then he finishes the year in high class A in the Carolina League playoffs.
Yeah.
What did Courtney Hawkins do to squeeze? He seems like he's almost like a hybrid of the two. If you fused Bubba Starling and Byron Buxton, in some ways you're going to end up at Courtney Hawkins, right?
It's possible. Hawkins, certainly the thing that stands out is his offensive potential. Now, at this point, he's too aggressive. You know, the walk rate is very, very low. And, you know, some of the players I've missed on in the past also had that same characteristic, such as a year ago, Brandon Drury for the Braves. He looked for all the world like a first division third baseman, but he had a really lousy first half this year.
Yeah, where was he? Did he wind up back in Danville?
No, he played with Rome all year, but okay. he did rebound a little bit in the second half. And going way back to the 06 list, remember the outfielder Kieron Pope with the Orioles?
I think that the fact that you had to rank Kieron Pope or Kieron, however you pronounce it, that's a sign that it was a bad league. You had Billy Rowell in the league. I mean, you know, what can you do? That was a league where we've gone back and realized the guy we should have had was Chris Medlin.
Yeah.
Tough guy to profile because a guy who got $75,000, was kind of new, but had a big-time year. Again, strikeout to walk was 36-2, we've gone back and looked. But at the same time, six-foot right-hander, I don't think anyone thought that. I always liked Chris Medlin. I mean, I remember talking when he signed. I know the signing scout, same guy signed Tommy Hansen. I remember seeing him in the minor leagues move up with Tommy Hansen, and I was always on the Tommy Hansen bandwagon. I never thought Chris Medlin would be better than Tommy Hansen. And not just it's a yawning gap now. I mean, like, when Tommy Hansen pitches into the sixth inning these days, it's a celebration in Atlanta. It's crazy. Whereas when Chris Medlin gives up a run, it's shocking. But, I mean, a six-foot right-handed reliever, those kind of guys are seemingly, even the ones who dominate in rookie ball, are kind of feel like a dime a dozen. Whereas the athletic outfielders who show you the athleticism and the upside, like Buxton, Hawkins, and Starling, they seem a little bit more rare. You know?
Yeah, so despite that check mark against Hawkins, I think most of the league agreed that he might have the highest offensive ceiling in the league.
And probably a profile right fielder, I guess, down the line.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think even the White Sox concede that he's not a center fielder. I would think more along the lines of Justin Upton or Giancarlo Stanton, at least in terms of that shift.
Right. Now, we had Max Kepler in this league. I think this was his third year in the Appy League, or
second.
Third year in rookie ball. So second year in the Appy League. This is probably a guy who improved as much as anybody. You usually don't have a lot of repeaters, I'm guessing, who make league top 20s. We had Nico Goodrum, who was in the third year in the league. Did he make last year's top 20?
No, he missed both years.
Okay. And he didn't make it this year, I don't believe, right?
No.
And then, but what did Kepler do to improve that much? Because he's a pretty intriguing prospect. Obviously, we all saw him in last week's – all of us saw him in last week's World Baseball Classic. I'm sure we were all watching. I was. But it seems like Max Kepler's made as much improvement as anybody in the minor leagues this year.
Yeah, you know, he filled out quite a bit, which would – for center fielder, which would seem like a bad thing. In fact, combined with his plate approach, this newfound bulk and maturity and aggressiveness – really helped him put together a fine season for Elizabethan. And, in fact, he actually shifted over to left field when Buxton arrived late in the year, kind of giving a sneak peek. But, managers really liked him because he was tough to pitch to, you know, not the sort of guy where you can just, you know, expand the zone on him and get him out with three or four pitches.
To me, that's the intriguing part, is that you would not expect a 19-year-old German
mm-hmm.
to have a polished approach at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
But reading his report, it sounded like he did in that league context, plus his power. He didn't just draw walks. He got into hitter's counts and then punished the ball when he did.
Right, right, which we saw that too.
That's right. I mean, he drove the ball. And I'm fascinated by, you know, what goes forward. I think I'm probably a little hyperbole that he improved as much as anyone in the minor leagues. But just watching him last year, then this year, again, just small look, as JJ likes to say, hashtag not a scout. But last year, his batting practice was just so unimpressive. The ball did not come off his bat with any authority. This year it did. You know, just the sound of the ball off the bat was really different for him. And like you said, physically, you could really see a difference. He went from being boyish to mannish, and that's a big difference.
He's 6'4". I think he's going to look like a corner outfielder when he's, you know, 22, 23.
And if he still moves, maybe not like a center fielder, but if he still moves the way that, you know, with any of his heritage, not heritage, any of his of his background, of his parents, his lineage. As they said, the scouts, when he signed, that he was moved gracefully. He does have two parents who are ballet dancers. That would help going forward if he's going to be as big as it looks like he's going to be. Is there a guy deeper on your list who's kind of a sleeper Appy League guy that you know, maybe might take a little bit longer, but that you liked?
You know, the guys at the very back, the Braves have a shortstop, Jose Peraza, fits the profile perfectly. He runs. He's a consistent fielder. Doesn't have a lot of, you know, strength or extra base power right now, but he's also, you know, 17, 18. So
right.
He's somebody who you might be hearing from in a couple of years, you know. Kind of like maybe a lesser Andrelton Simmons kind of player.
Not like the Braves even need a new shortstop with Andrelton Simmons. I mean, that guy,
And then
another one has come so he's come along so much quicker, I think, than we thought he would.
And Cameron Gallagher, the Royals catcher, a couple of injuries kept him from catching as many games as the Royals would have liked, but looks like he has kind of like a Devin Mesoraco starter kit. They're both from rural Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And the big, bulky right-handed hitters.
Some physicality, I was about to say. It's like a right-handed hitting physical catchers from Pennsylvania. That's a good starting point for those comparisons. We talked earlier, before we move off the Happy League, about how high draft pedigree can help you on this league list. We had a lot of high draft guys in that 11 to 20. Brandon Martin for the Rays. Gavin Cecchini, another shortstop for the Mets. Carson Kelly for the Cardinals, and then Daniel Norris with the Blue Jays. Let's talk a little bit about those guys. Daniel Norris probably had about as bad a stats as anybody on any of these league top 20s. He sounds like he's got a long way to go for the Blue Jays, not just because of the numbers, just the stuff was inconsistent, it sounds like.
Yeah, if you really parse it down a lot, you can see – well, first we should mention he had an 8 ERA in the Ivy League, and you never see that.
And this is a guy who, again, in 2011 draft, if people remember – Jim on the draft show where they had the Jim Callis, the Baseball America top 30 players or whatever on the board, on the touchscreen with Jim and Matt Yaloff, and Josh Bell and Daniel Norris were the last two guys off that board, if memory serves. And Daniel Norris got, what, $3
million
from the Blue Jays? $2 million
from the
Blue Jays.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a dude, and he should be moving in that same circle as, maybe a year behind the Aaron Sanchez, Noah Syndergaard, Justin Nicolino, those guys who were full season ball this year. Is he close to even, just judging by what he did in the Appy League, could he be in full season ball next year? Is he going to repeat?
It's weird because his strikeout and walk numbers were in line, but with runners on base, his OPS against was 900.
Wow.
So, he was just completely falling out of his mechanics or something was happening with runners on base.
On the stretch,
From the stretch. And it just sounds like he had a really tough time getting his delivery in sync, balancing, and then extending through. It just seems like there's a lot of mechanical issues at this stage.
So some maturity probably issues there, just in terms of consistency, focus, and also some mechanical issues. I think he's athletic and he's got some physicality to him.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like he has to focus on doing what he's been told to do, because the natural ability is there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think everyone missed that badly on Derek Norton. He was a consensus first-round talent in that draft. And Cecchini and Martin, a couple of young shortstops, it seems like it's more of a physical, waiting for the physicality to come along to catch up with some of their skills.
Yeah, for Cecchini, he's, none of his tools at this point look like they're going to be more than 55-ish.
Yeah.
But, if he does stay on shortstop, you'll take a 55 hitter.
Right, absolutely.
Martin has pretty impressive power. He's the only middle infielder with double-digit home runs in the league.
Okay.
Long way to go with just making contact, and his two-strike approach.
Doesn't exist right now.
Yeah. It's pretty easy to get him out once you're ahead.
The best part of that is you're in rookie ball. That's where it's okay to not have a two-strike approach. That's why they have rookie balls, for you to learn that. And now these guys are all in instructional leagues.
Hopefully not flipping tires on a beach.
So don't assume that Martin will make the Jake Hager jump to low A. I would probably expect Hudson Valley next year.
That makes some sense. The Baseball America podcast with John and Matt. Faithful listener Joe LaCates asks, got to hear from Matt what evaluators were saying about Lance McCullers Jr. in the Ivy League this year. Now, Lance McCullers Jr. did not qualify, I believe, for the Ivy League. Now, how many appearances did he make in that league? Three or four?
Just a handful, yeah. He, about as far as I got on him was, it sounds like his three main pitches will play. I guess.
Yeah, four outings, I guess, in the Appy League there. And 10 walks in 15 innings, but pretty hard to really parse that down, I think. Again, from a statistical
standpoint. One manager who saw him good did like his pitchability and the potential for his three pitches. And he had seen him in high school, so he had a basis for comparison.
That's interesting. Well, this is a guy who, to me, in the draft, was as good of an arm as there was in the entire draft class. So for the Astros to get him at 41, pretty impressive, I thought. The Astros had a pretty good draft haul and well-represented in the GCL list with that Ben Babler did with Carlos Correa, number one overall prospect, pick in the draft, number two prospect in the GCL behind Byron Buxton. And then Rio Ruiz was very high. In the GCL, and that's a guy who missed most of the spring, but really has a pretty pure swing and gets some Eric Chavez comps. So I love those rookie ball lists. I think it's really awesome to look at what they were 5 years ago. You know, you can look at 2010 and see the Braves already have a big leaguer and Andrelton Simmons. You can look at 2011 and see that J.R. Graham's getting some Chris Medlin comparisons and could be in the big leagues pretty quickly. And the thing I love about the Chris Medlin comps is that J.R. Graham was also a high school shortstop. I think he played some college shortstop at Santa Clara early career. Mm-hmm. They're both smallish, and neither one of them was a full-time starter. We just were looking, really, Chris Medlin didn't start in the minor leagues a lot until like 2008, 2009. J.R. Graham is a little bit further ahead in terms of being put in a rotation, but really dominated this year in the Carolina League. So some fun names to look at. Matt, I think a little bit less fun in the Eastern League is we're in the Eastern League and in the AAA, even in the IL. I can't think of an example of this in the IL other than some of the pitchers who put up really gaudy numbers like a Tyler Cloyd. But at upper levels, we always get the question in chats or we get the questions on Twitter about outliers statistically who are also outliers in terms of age. And I got to ask you, in the Eastern League, Darren, don't call me Babe Ruff, how tough is it to take a guy who hits 20 home runs in a month like Babe Ruff did, like Darren Ruff did, and try to put him in contact with the rest of that league when he's 26 years old? How hard of a nut is that to crack when you're evaluating him as a prospect for a league top 20?
Well, this is where you can look a little bit into the statistical profile. Reading is a nice hitter's park for that league, the Eastern League. And you look at it and really break it down. Ruff hit a lot better in that park, and he hit a lot better versus lefties, which we've already seen evidence of in the major leagues, where he's gone deep off of John Lannan.
Yeah.
And Detweiler, Ross Detweiler.
I assume you were going to say Jeff Locke.
So we're seeing the Phillies really put, you know, Ruff's strengths on display, and he's actually impacted a couple of games.
Wow, I didn't realize he hit 19 home runs in 148 at-bats against left-handed pitchers. That is sick. He slugged .838 against left-handers.
If some team wants to carve out just a right-handed pinch hitter, you know, platoon, left field, first base, he's the guy.
I wonder about the left field, just having watched a couple of those Nats-Phillies games. I think it's a noble experiment to try him in left field. I don't know that you could do that on any kind of a consistent basis at the major leagues. His arm, he needs to get on the Alan Jager long toss program if he's going to be an outfielder, because his arm, it is a rag arm.
It's tough because, you know, you look at other late developing guys like an Alan Craig.
Yeah.
You know, he was able to play third base, corner outfield.
Right. He even played second base in the major leagues.
Yeah.
You could not imagine Darren Ruff even doing that in any kind of possible way, right?
Yeah, and Craig probably had 2 years in AAA at age 26, where Ruff is right now.
At AA. I mean, Ruff's in AA. The big leagues. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But
right.
Yeah, I mean, his season, and really the thing is, Matt, it was a good, not great year. It was a year in line with what he'd done in the minor leagues until August, when he just went berserk.
Yeah, I talked to his manager about Darren, and the point he emphasized was starting maybe halfway through last season, Ruff really tried to begin hitting the ball in the air, really trying to loft the ball, whereas before he'd been more of a doubles hitter.
Right. He was a gap-to-gap guy. I mean, 2010, that half year, well, two-thirds of a year at Clearwater, five home runs and 34 doubles. So the Florida State League, you're playing in big league parks, heavy air. You don't see gaudy home run totals usually in that league. And last year, his 2011 season there was a great year. 308 with 43 doubles, 17 home runs. That was a very, very good year. Still didn't necessarily make him a prospect. I think it's a great story, and I like Darren Ruff. But like you said, to me, it feels like his future role, and this is kind of foreshadowing our Cody Decker podcast part that's coming up, I think his future role is as a DH first base, like you said, a platoon guy, especially while he's inexpensive. Feels like he's an American League player more than a National
League
player.
Yeah, like a Brandon Snyder, like what the Rangers got out of Brandon Snyder this year.
Yeah, it's a good comp, and a lot more power.
You're just going to spot him at first in DH against left-handed pitchers. That's the ideal role,
I suppose,
in my opinion.
I suppose you could do that in Philadelphia with Ryan Howard if you weren't paying Ryan Howard $25 million, where it would look a little bit bad to platoon him. But
that's what they have Ty Wigginton for.
Outstanding. And it's in the same organization, but I kind of had a little bit of this as well this year in the International League with Tyler Cloyd.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, a guy who's been on the radar more as a performance guy than as a stud prospect over the years, and just gave up Bryce Harper's 21st home run the other day and gave up a mammoth shot. I'm not sure if you saw
this,
but that home run he gave up to Michael Morse, One of the longer home runs you're going to see. I think it was 480 feet.
Into the D.C. bullpen?
It was, yeah. It was, as Nathan Ruddy would say, a bomb. But Tyler Cloyd, I mean, I think in most years in the International League, and I'll give this little spoiler alert. The International League was our only one-star league in this year's league top 20s. We rate all the leagues on a 1 to 5 star basis relative to each other, and the IL is at the bottom. There's a 20 league in terms of talent this year. And Tyler Cloyd made the list. I'm pretty sure he did. I have to double-check the final edit. I wrote him up, but you never know with Jim Callis doing the final edit. But, I mean, I think in most years, Tyler Cloyd would not have made the International League list when you're sitting at 88 and you're 86 to 90 with a fastball, and it's just not a plus pitch, but he's a pitchability right-hander, Matt. And at some point, I think in these league lists, especially the higher you go, the stats do matter a little bit. And I also feel like age matters a little bit less for a pitcher, which is why Christian Garcia, speaking of the Nationals, can make a league top 20 in their National League at age 27.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a different case, but I'm not sure what your thought process is on Tyler Cloyd or ranking a guy like that. Still feel like the only reason he made my IL top 20 was just that the IL was so weak this year. It was Ukraine week.
He kind of does he kind of remind you of Josh Tomlin, who's also a former International League star?
Yeah.
You know, just a guy who cuts the ball and throws his three other pitches and just...
Great comp.
And Tomlin had a good half season with the Indians. Cloyd is doing that now. It's kind of first exposure to the league.
Right.
Tomlin got hurt, so we don't know exactly what's behind his fade.
Exactly.
I think Tomlin started an All-Star game just like Cloyd, the AAA All-Star game.
I think you're right.
I think there are a number of parallels between the two.
That is fascinating. And Tyler Cloyd, I think, just like Josh Tomlin, has gotten to the big leagues before ever making a top 30. I don't think Cloyd ever made one of our Phillies' top 30s. He may have snuck in last year.
Hmm.
I don't think he did. He got best control. No, he hasn't made it before. He got best control in the IL this year at in the best tools. I mean, the International League was full of guys like that. It was full of really good defensive shortstops who couldn't hit, guys like Jose Iglesias and Pedro Florimon. And it was also a league that at the beginning of the year you would have looked at it and said, okay, Bryce Harper is going to be in the league long enough to be this league's top prospect. Will Middlebrooks is going to be in this league long enough to qualify. And you looked at the Eastern League and you looked at AA around the minors and said, okay, Zach Wheeler's going to get up here enough to qualify for the IL by the second half. Or maybe what's the left-hander with the Rays? Came up at the end of the year with the Bulls. I'm blank on his name right now. Not Cabrera.
Colomé, right?
Colomé. I'm sorry, right-handed. Yeah, Colomé. Mm-hmm. Alex Colomé came up the end of the year, made 3 or 4 starts. Really, there was a lot of talent in the International League at one time or another that in a lot of other years would have qualified. John Pettibone,
yep.
The guy who fell, I think, one start short of qualifying in the International
League. If the Orioles aren't in the race, Machado might have gone up there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think in most years, the IL was set up to be a normal International League year, but just the way things happened, guys got promoted to the major leagues faster. Maybe if Darren Ruff has his big month in June instead of in August, he winds up in the IL and he's my problem, not yours. Or as much my problem as he is yours. But instead, you know, you have a league with a lot of Chris Parmalees and guys who've been up and down guys already who wind up in your league top 20. And that's, to me, where I do think when you have a low number of projectable guys who are still on the way up, then you wind up with, okay, who had the best stats and why? And then if you find out why they did it and if that's repeatable, frankly, with Tyler Cloyd, I don't even think is that repeatable. But he's done much better in the major leagues than I ever thought he would just in this small sample size. So do you have a preference that you've done the Eastern League? You've done an International League list, have you not, before?
Yeah, IL, PCL.
So you've done them all.
Appalachian, Pioneer, Eastern.
What league have you not done? No, but that's you've done 5 different league top 20s. Which do you enjoy doing more, the lower-level leagues where you're kind of blazing the trail of discovery or the higher-level leagues where you have a little bit more data to work with?
I like the thrill of discovery with the Appalachian League in particular because it's a good balance of high school and international players. I don't think a lot of the other leagues really have that strike that balance quite as well. We have first-round picks upside,
right.
International bonus babies, you know?
I like the fact that you've inherited the James Bailey passion for the Appalachian League. But that is a unique league. It's fun for us because you get to go see some of those players in Burlington. That helps.
That is a huge factor.
I think it helps that you get to see the players so you can ask intelligent questions. And then also that you get to see the managers in person and develop some of those relationships in person, not just on the phone. For example, this year at the AAA National Championship, Arnie Baylor, you know, I've been dealing with him in the Eastern League for years. The first time I ever met Arnie was in the IL Championship game. I had no idea he had such a ferocious mustache.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was eye-opening. But so that kind of stuff, you know, you don't always get to do, and we don't have the T&E budget, Matt, to go gallivanting around the country and see all these players. But even if we do see them, really seeing them just helps you ask a little bit more intelligent question. Again, as JJ likes to say, hashtag not a scout. Is there a deep sleeper in your IL, in your Eastern League list, I should say, that you want to point out to before we let you go?
Someone who didn't make it?
Whether it's a guy who didn't make it or a guy who did, who maybe people aren't as aware of.
I'm gonna set you up for somebody you like to talk about.
Okay.
As an outfielder by the name of L.J. Hose in the Orioles system.
Shockingly, I have become the L.J. Hose defender.
He qualified for both the Eastern and International Leagues, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I really don't know what to make of L.J. Hose, to be honest with you. I know this. He doesn't profile. So that's a big part of the problem. And I know that earlier in his career, when the Orioles wisely tried to play him at second base, that did not work. And that's a shame for L.J. Hose in terms of being ranked as a prospect, because if he were a second baseman, I think he'd profile a lot better. In fact, if he were a second baseman, he might have been in the big leagues by now. I think it's a little bit of a strike against him that at age 22, coming off the year he had this year, and with the injuries in the big league outfield in Baltimore, that he was never called up until they had exhausted a lot of other opportunities.
Including Andy Chavez.
Right. Twice. And he's gotten one at bat. And they're still playing Andy Chavez a lot now down the stretch of the season. And he's still, you know, Hose has only gotten one at bat. He wound up making the IL top 20 because he's the youngest player who hit in that league that I could find, really, outside of Starling Marte. Weren't a lot of young guys who hit in that league. And as a 22-year-old with a polished approach who does have bat-to-ball skills and some consistent athleticism, ability to hit for average, draw some walks, to me there's a place for him, but he's about as tough a profile fit as there is, Matt, in the upper minor leagues of a guy who hit 300 in AAA and 265, you know, for UNW in the Eastern League.
Where do you put his run tool at? How much of a runner is he?
I got a 55, 60 run times on him. So he's probably more of a tick above average rather than a true plus, which is where that 55 grade kind of comes in for some clubs.
Because you give him that 70 and you can kind of see Rajay Davis or somebody like that.
Right. That's the real reason he doesn't profile is that he doesn't run enough to play center field. He's just not a center fielder. To me, if there was some way if Jeff Goldblum came along and could merge Xavier Avery and L.J. Hose into one player, as long as he kept the Brundle fly out of the mix, you would have a useful player there if you could merge L.J. Hose and Xavier Avery. But all the athleticism that Avery has, that if Hose had some of that speed that could take him to that level of being a center fielder, or even if he had some of the arm strength to be a right fielder, it might fit better. For me, L.J. Hose has a chance to fit in Baltimore because they have power, have non-profile power at catcher and shortstop at center field. They have a center fielder who hits like a corner bat. They have a catcher who hits like a corner bat. And they have a shortstop who, at least in terms of power, produces power like a corner bat. So what their offense really lacks, as it's currently constructed, is somebody to consistently get on base. That's why Nick Markakis, I thought, was so important to them. So I could see where L.J. Hose would actually fit for them in left field, as long as Wieters, Jones, Hardy produced power for them at those non-traditional positions. But I still think he's a tough guy to carry long-term. I think he's more of a reserve fit than anything else. But I do think there's a 20% chance that he hits enough to make himself a regular, even though there's just not a lot of power in there. He's going to have to – it would certainly help if he stole bases more efficiently as opposed to going 20 for 32 like he did this year. So he's a tough – I just don't know what to make of that guy. I feel like I'm on the optimistic side with him, and I still think he's a reserve, up and down kind of guy. But the Orioles don't have a whole lot of – there's not a lot of depth in that farm system. Still amazing, though, that both Machado and Bundy saw the big leagues for that team this year, especially Dylan Bundy. But there are lots of parts of that Orioles story that are great parts of the story. good podcast here, though. We got the second part of the podcast coming up with myself and Cody Decker. Hope you enjoy that. Enjoyed this part of it, Matt, with you, and we'll see all the rest of you on the second part of this podcast with John Manuel and Cody Decker. For Matt Eddy, we'll see you next time. So long, everybody. On the Baseball America podcast, I'm John Manuel, joined by a guest today. It's the one and only Cody Decker. I guess in the future we'll just introduce everyone as at Decker6. We'll introduce everybody only by their Twitter handles. But Cody, former UCLA first baseman, now in the San Diego Padres organization, most recently playing first base outfield for outfield for Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic. We'll touch on all those things, on Cody's comedy career, and on why Baseball America hates him so much in this segment of the show. So, Cody, joining us from Los Angeles, correct?
I am. Actually, right now I'm at UCLA. I just finished running. And why do you people hate me?
Well, let's just start right there. I think it all comes down to – I never really liked my father, Cody. But, no, I think it comes down to Baseball America and prospects. One thing – people notice, players notice when we don't write positively about them, I guess. That is that true of not just you but other minor leaguers?
I have noticed that guys appreciate or not appreciate when they're being written negatively about. I don't read your publication. Never heard of you. This is the first I've ever heard of you guys.
Okay.
But that's not true. I've never heard of you. my mom and dad love getting like Google alerts that have to do with my name, and they love to read me things. And I could care less what's being written about me. I'm assuming it's all negative because I have read your publication before. And basically, like my mom and dad get irate with how the amount of bashing on me there is. And I like it. It's good for the bulletin board. I like to throw it up on there and be like, well, who's after me today? Oh, I have enemies, Baseball America. I like, shake my fist in the air.
I like it. Well, the roots of it apparently go back to what I can think of. I do know that Aaron Fitt and I have this gnawing part in the back of our minds that we either want members of the 2008 UCLA team that was our preseason number one team and that did not live up to that potential. We either want guys like who were on that team like you.
That's right. Oh, man.
We either want you guys to be really awesome, and so in retrospect, we could say, see, that team was loaded, or we want you guys all to stink and karmic, for some karma to come back up because you guys let us down. So Charles Brewer,
okay.
Gavin Brooks, Brandon Crawford, all you guys, Jermaine Curtis, it all goes back to that.
Well, here's the thing about that. What I find really – that's where it all stemmed from. We underperformed that year, but we weren't by any means bad. I mean, we were in the regionals, almost won the regional, got knocked out by Fullerton because that's what we did back then. We kept getting beat by Fullerton in regionals for super regionals. And it was funny. I had a really down junior year, and it might have been a blogger for you guys or someone wrote in the reason the Bruins underperformed was Cody Decker's abysmal season. And I'm like, oh, that's just what I wanted to read at the end of this wonderful season. That's great. I'm going to go shoot myself.
I bet it was actually – wasn't there an outfield on your team? Cohen? Gabe Cohen.
Gabe Cohen. I love that guy. We played together since we were like 12.
I think I put it all on Gabe Cohen as opposed to you. Well, that was probably me.
Well,
we've already established that I'm kind of a dick in this.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Well, it depends if you read that wonderful double A quote you gave me.
That's right. That was the one that we found that probably is the root of this was apparently a 2009 draft chat. Now, I don't think I did our California coverage in 2009, but it was draft related. And someone asked if what I thought of you as a prospect, and my answer was, and I think you hit 21 home runs as a senior, correct?
I did.
Yep. So I wrote, I just can't see teams getting excited about Decker. I think of him as a nice college player, and that's about it. He should be, this is the damning part, he should be a fine AA DH one day. Not trying to be harsh, although I was just incredibly harsh. But I just
and for the record.
Sorry, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. And for the record, I was an above-average AA DH, so how dare you?
And a AAA player this year, which was the other part that you said during the World Baseball Classic, they didn't even include your AAA stats in mentioning your season
this year. Well, to be honest, my AAA stats weren't anything to write home about. I only had about 90 to 100 at-bats, and they were static at-bats towards the end there. So I kind of started off hot there and kind of went off, and then I fell off really quick, bad 20 at bats, and then it turned into like 30, and then it was just static at bats, and my average was way down, but I still hit 4 home runs while I was there, still hit like 15 RBIs while I was there, and I went back down, and no one seemed to, it was like that month that never happened. So yeah, 25 home runs this year. No.
29 home
29.
Runs.
29. And he's like, well, you also had 67 RBIs. Why so little? I had 81, but whatever. Thanks.
I'll tell you what. I think I thought that was a 2012 stat line, that it was San Antonio, Tucson, San Antonio, because I think I said on our – I'm pretty sure I wrote that you and Nate Freiman combined for 49 home runs as teammates at San Antonio, which is technically true, but that does short you your 4 home runs in AAA.
The point is, San Antonio, sir.
And the point is – you hit a lot of home runs. You hit 20-plus in college as a senior. You hit 28 a couple years back at Lake Elsinore. Now this year you hit 29, so one would think that would garner you a smidge of respect.
Oh, you know, I like to. I mean, my mom says I'm special, so I feel good.
Well, Team Israel thought you were special. That was one of the first reasons why I wanted to make sure I talked to you about this, because I do have a little case of World Baseball Classic fever. I haven't had enough cowbell, apparently, to assuage that, so I'm hoping that you can help me get past my World Baseball Classic fever. But you did play for Team Israel last weekend, a gut-wrenching loss, a 10-inning loss to Spain. But if you don't mind taking me through, and our listeners, a little bit through that process, when were you first contacted for playing for Team Israel? Was it Brad Ausmus, or was it someone else who reached out to you about playing for Team Israel?
It actually was Brad, but I, be honest with you, I reached out to him.
Okay, cool.
Because I literally read on MLB.com that they're trying to put a team together. Brad Ausmus is involved, and I'm just sitting there. Well, hey, I'm Jewish, and Brad Ausmus works for the Padres. There's got to be a way I can con my way onto this team through Brad. I mean,
right.
That's just got to be like I just got to. I mean, I know I qualify, but like I don't like if it was a coach from another another organization, I don't know how easily it would have been.
Gotcha.
So I immediately emailed Brad, and I didn't even know if Brad even knew who I was, because I just assumed no one knows who I am.
And if we know who we are, if we know who you are, we don't like you.
No, and if you know me, you just hate me. It's just this innate reaction towards me. It's amazing. Which is so sad because I'm so charming and I have a great smile. But I immediately emailed him, and this is actually kind of funny. I emailed him, and I think it said something along the lines of, "Hey," he was like, "Dear Brad, my name is." It was like a formal letter that you send to like a player when you're like 12.
Dear Mr.
It was like, dear, yeah, it was like, "Dear Mr. Ausmus, you are really great. I'm Cody Decker. I play for the Padre organization the last few years. Not sure if you knew me. By the way, I hit this many home runs last year. I got hurt this year." And right away, like, I'm like, I'm Jewish. I would kill to be involved with this. This is something I really would love to be a part of. He immediately emailed me back, and it wasn't even, oh, well, you got it. It was, I know who you are, Cody. And I'm like, oh, well, in that case, can I play? And he's just like, yes. At the time, we weren't sure if it was going to happen. He's like, but if it happens, your name's definitely on the list. Would love to have you play. Be great. And, you know, everything kind of just fell in line. And I mean, I can easily say this has been one of the best baseball experiences of my life. Every detail of it. It was something really special.
Yeah.
With the exception of how it ended. I mean,
yeah, I think I saw the video. I saw the video of your team trainer. That seemed like that was pretty big way to start things off. You guys were pretty keyed up. What was it, the Blue Jays trainer, correct?
Yes. Oh, his speech. That was an amazing speech. And like everyone was just kind of beaming with pride. Not that like we ever, not that any of us had any real issues or hiding that we were Jewish or anything like that. Nothing like that. But look, I mean, I've never I played like against the Maccabee team when I was a kid. I didn't play for them because I played for too many teams back then. And then, you know, I've never played for an all Jewish team. And it was kind of something. These are all pro ball players who've been playing for a long time, played college. Everyone's a smart, good ball player. And we all just had that little connection, that connection that we were Jewish. And to us, it wasn't a little connection. It was something really big and deeper. And it really became, you know, we gelled really well right off the bat. And I mean, I can't say enough positive things about everything about it, about the coaching staff, about the players, about, you know, how we were received by, the Israeli players and everyone that put it together, it was something that it's unparalleled.
Yeah, have you been to Israel before? Did this kind of heighten your awareness, maybe about your faith and your ethnicity? Did it get you in touch with that at all?
We're all trying to get us to go to Israel. We're all like, all the players are constantly emailing back and forth, like, let's plan a trip to Israel this offseason. Let's go. We want to do it. And it would probably have been a lot easier if we won against Spain. I mean, that whole modified double elimination thing kind of got us, I think. But, you know, it was just, that game was a dogfight. It was an absolute dogfight on both ends, and they just came out on top.
Really seemed like in the middle of that game, I don't want to get too in the weeds in that game, but I did watch that game twice. So I watched it live, then I watched it on the DVR. It seemed like when they brought in...
You watched it twice?
Yeah.
That's 17 hours you'll never get back.
That's probably true. It was an exciting game. But when they brought in Eduardo Morlan, I mean, here's Eduardo Morlan, who's Cuban, Cuban-American, then pitching the Futures game. He was a prospect. He was one of these prospects that we liked, and then now is an indie ball.
Yeah, you hated me.
That's right. But he seemed like he kind of changed the game when he came in there.
It was an exciting game. It was a great game to be a part of. Everyone was fired up on both ends. Yeah, it more or less felt like a college game, you know, like a college regional game. Because every inning, everyone's trying to win every single inning, every pitch. You know, we're cheering in the dugout like we're 18-year-old freshmen in you know, the Pac-10. It was a lot of fun. It was something really special. And it was just, like I said, it was heartbreaking. I like spent like the next day shaking in bed after that loss. It was a gun wrencher, but you know, it was really a special experience.
Yeah. And the intensity of international baseball seems like, you know, college baseball is the best analog that American fans kind of had to that. I mean, you already mentioned that, but that's the only thing that's really kind of comparable. And talk a little bit about your teammate, both for Team Israel and at San Antonio this year. I mean, Nate Freiman, he's like 8 inches taller than you. He's a gargantuan human being, but he had a big weekend.
He's large.
Four home runs. You know, what's similar and what's different about you guys as players? Seems like you guys arrive at the same point or a similar point as far as what your strengths and weaknesses are as players, and yet you come at it from very different physical aspects.
It's actually kind of funny. Me and Nate are very close. We're really good friends. Really get along. Like, we're like, oh, it's almost like we're not comfortable hitting behind each other or next to each other.
Huh.
We talk about every range of topics, from like politics to comic books. I mean, we talk everything because we assume we're the only educated people in the area at all times. So we became extremely close, and you know, he's just this gigantic, extraordinarily talented, just goofy guy, and he's so quiet. And it's funny, when you give him praise, he's so uncomfortable about it. Like, he doesn't want to hear your praise, he doesn't want to accept your praise. He'll just sit there and deflect it on someone else. He's like, yeah, but that guy did great. And it's just because he's literally the nicest person in the world. If you didn't like Nate Freiman, there's something wrong with you. he's really just the nicest guy in the world. So it was funny. He went crazy this weekend. In fact, like, one of those games, he completely carried our offense. He really, like, first, he had four hits in the tournament, all home runs, one of which was the hardest hit ball I've ever seen him hit. And even his outs were hard hit. He was just going crazy. And after the game, he just kind of leans into me and just goes, I don't know what to do. I'm like, what do you mean? I've never done this before. And I kind of looked at him like, deciding, I don't know how I took this, because one, what he said to me is completely not true. He does that all the time.
Right.
He has games like that often. He's an unbelievable player, especially for his size. It's just it's like shocking. And he's like, I don't know what to do. I've never hit like this before. And I was like, it's okay. You just keep doing it. Just make sure you go ice your back, because it's probably really sore after carrying us today.
That's it.
You get ready in a couple of days for the next game.
Yeah.
And just, I love hitting behind him. And the reason he did so well is because he had the best protection in the country.
Yeah, you and Casey Hart, the back-to-back UCLA guys there.
Oh, yeah, good old Case.
And Casey, trivia, I guess, for him is that he was the guy who officially wound up ending Sean Green's career, because he pinch hit for Sean there late in that game, and you tweeted on your way out to Israel to Jupiter, not to Israel, but to Jupiter for that weekend, that you were on the same plane as Sean Green. Kind of, what was that like to grow up a Dodger fan, be a fan of Sean Green, then to be on the same team with him?
I mean, I was legit. This tournament, I was legitimately starstruck twice. Once with Sean Green, because one, I'm born and raised a Dodger fan, and like, also being Jewish in LA, Sean Green was more than a man to like everyone.
Sure.
He was like our hero. And the other guy was Gagne. I got to meet Gagne in this tournament, and I was starstruck. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to like get a sign that said game over and like run around screaming around him in circles. And then tape it online, let it go viral, and let that become something that I never had the courage.
That's too bad. It's too bad that he I guess he tried to get eligible for the French team and did not. But you that would have been pretty special if you'd gotten a chance to face him. I don't think you guys even played France, but
no, we didn't. We missed him.
That would have been cool.
But
that would have been pretty special if he'd gotten to pitch for France. I think that would have made France's team a little bit better if he'd pitched for France.
He was cool meeting them. But Green, like, I see he's on. Oh no, I'm sorry. What did you say?
I was a Dodger fan, Padre player. Do you ever have any conflicting feelings? Or are you more of a Padres fan than a Dodger fan now? How does that work when you get drafted?
Really, once I got drafted, I put everything in the drawer, and everything was about my team, and the Padres, the big league club has. I mean, hell, the majority of the guys on the team are now like my ex-teammates, and I root for them all the way. I'm a huge, huge fan of all of it. So right now a diehard Padres fan.
There you go. That makes sense.
And I'm sure if I got like Rule 5 by the Orioles, I'd be a diehard Orioles fan.
See, we should have talked to you longer ago. If we hadn't hated you, we could have gotten that because you have that insight. I was about to ask you, now this offseason, maybe you'll get Rule 5. I mean, it's a protection year.
Yeah.
Who knows, huh?
You know, it's always a crapshoot. I mean, that's like that business aspect of the game that I've always done a good job of staying out of and trying to. It's funny. Every minor leaguer always tries to play GM. We always like sit around and like around trade deadline, we all sit around and like snicker with each other, like, oh, what are they going to do? They're going to do this, this, this. If I was doing it, I'd do this, this, and we're never right ever. We're just so wrong, and then you guys make your predictions, and you guys are even wrong than we were.
About to say, it doesn't make you any different from the rest of us, exactly.
So it's that aspect. Like, it'd be fun, but I love my organization. I love being a part of this organization. They're the guys that gave me the shot.
Well, it sounds like you enjoy the game. It sounds like you have a lot of passion for baseball. And our draft report that we wrote about you mentioned, I guess, another passion that you had. That you did act some in high school. Did you act at all in college? And is that, just judging by your Twitter, I don't know if you're the baseball's version of Louis C.K., but there's a sense of humor in here people haven't already picked up on the podcast. That is that a potential career for you out of baseball after baseball is over?
I've always thought about it. This is funny. I tried to apply to the film school here at UCLA,
okay.
And I also tried to apply to the theater program. Both said no, and they said because I was an athlete here, there's just no time. You can't do it. Mm. You can't do both. I said, that's horrible because I'm the greatest actor ever. And they didn't believe me, and they moved on. I used to act. I was part of a theater company, Santa Monica Civil Light Opera. Doesn't exist anymore, so I don't know why I gave them that shout out. But it was a lot of fun. I had so much fun performing on stage. There was actually a story that you had mentioned to me earlier, which is a complete true story. Like, you can't write these things. If I saw it in a movie, I wouldn't believe it. I had a matinee show that day for the Music Man. I was the star of it. Played Professor Harold Hill, which is the star. I didn't have a small role in the background. Come on, man.
Okay.
and the show was a daytime show, so we had a morning game. My coach was nice enough to like make the game that day in the morning to accommodate me, which I thought was the nicest thing I had ever done for me. Well, we had the game well in hand. It was a great game. We were winning 1-0 in the last inning. I hit a home run my first at bat, and I got intentionally walked 4 times after that. And we had him down, and then finally 2 outs in the last inning, they score a run. We ended up playing 11 innings.
Oh, goodness.
and the show was supposed to start a half hour before the game ended. So literally when the game ended, the theater was just on the other side of the campus. So I ran over to the theater, changed as quickly as I can, and I performed the show.
That's pretty
awesome. It's kind of, looking back, it's kind of a cool story. It was fun. Something that doesn't happen every day.
You had to have an understudy who was really pissed off that you showed up in time. He's like stomping off.
Come on. You think for 1 second someone was going to understudy this guy? Come on.
That shows you how little I know about the acting game.
With these pipes, you've never heard me sing, but with these pipes, you can't replace them.
So I'm just looking forward to I'm hoping that the producers of Glee are listening to this, so they can have you as the cameo, as the jock or the big league baseball player who comes to campus for a younger brother or something and gets on Glee and sings in the music band.
Wouldn't that be great? They can have that that fine future double A DH come on and do the job.
That made an impression on you. That really
did. It made more of an impression. I think it's hilarious personally, but my mom was so offended by it, she wouldn't show it to me. she was just like, "You sound not that good." She was going off. I'm like, "What's going on?" It's like, "I'm not even going to show it to you." I'm like, "Now you kind of have to." And she showed it to me, and I honestly laughed. I thought it was a really funny comment.
Well,
she didn't find it so funny.
It's pretty funny. I think that's the my all-time favorite story like that is when I was talking to Gary Brown a couple years ago. You mentioned Fullerton. And when Christian Colon was in high school, I had talked to several scouts about Christian Colon, about Colon being a guy who would be an ideal candidate to move to catcher. And so I wrote that in our draft preview, and I was talking to Gary – and it was Gary and Christian's junior year in college, and I was talking to Gary about this story about how, you know, their roles had kind of flipped. You know, they'd always been linked together because they were high school guys who played on travel ball teams, and they went to Fullerton and all this. And I was talking about writing about them for 3 or 4 years, and Gary goes, "Were you the guy who wrote that Christian needed to move to catcher?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm the one who wrote that." And he just laughed and said, "Me and Christian thought that was the stupidest thing we ever read." So it's always made that, you know, I've always known at BA that, especially when you're writing about stuff, guys for the draft, that the people that you have to remember that your audience can include the person that you're writing about, but that doesn't mean that hasn't been at the back of my mind rather than the front of my mind.
No, literally, I harbor nothing on that. I thought it was the funniest comment ever written about me.
It's
so I have used that comment multiple times since then. And when you were talking to me about this earlier, you looked up and like, "Oh man, I wrote this about you." I'm like, "Oh my god, yeah, I remember that. You're a dick."
It was a Mitt Romney moment for me. The last thing, I do want to encourage people to check out your Twitter feed at Decker6. I'm just going to read a few of my favorite recent of your tweets, because I think you're pretty funny on here. And I, again, this is why I think you, there is a future for you in the entertainment industry beyond your baseball career, not instead of.
Well, I've always thought about getting back into acting, but, you know, to do that, I know I'd have to drop like 15 pounds, or according to your publication, 60.
That's it. But I like this one. "Oh my God, I have a horrible deal. A horrible idea. I'm sorry. I'll start over. Delivery is everything in comedy. Oh my God, I have a horrible idea." Tyler Perry's writing process. I love that joke.
Yeah.
That's a great joke.
Yeah, he's horrible.
I also enjoy,
like,
I'm a people person. Cannibals. That seems like the quote, and then the funny, ironic person saying the quote. That seems like someone that you do fairly consistently and fairly well.
I like to refer to it as like smarts. It's stupid smart humor.
I like it. Yep.
It's like something that is like right. It's something that's right. It's just observational. It's right in front of your eyes, but you wouldn't really think of it. It's something like that. I like making little observations about that, and I try my very best to keep profanity out of it. Every once in a while, a word will sneak in. Luckily, I haven't gotten into trouble yet. The Padres have been nothing but great to me about my social media life.
I wrote down yet. That's good.
No, they haven't. I was writing a blog for a little bit called Minor Thoughts. So that was pretty funny, and it was just my day-to-day thing during the season, my thoughts on this and that. And the first one I wrote, I'm like, well, I said some stupid things, but nothing like that could get me into trouble. And that day, our basically Randy Smith came up to me, and that day he just happened to be in town and looked at me and said, "Hey, Decker, thoroughly enjoyed the blog. Looking forward to it." But he said it like with this almost look in his eye, like, "You better watch what you say or I'll kill you in your sleep."
Well, the thing is that you are cursed by the ghost of Dirk Hayhurst having come up through that organization and already.
I know Dirk's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. Great writer and a hilarious guy. So that, I mean, that's the thing is that you're already trotting upon ground that the Padres have already experienced with that, you know.
Yeah, but luckily Dirk got the big league. I've been fairly under the radar with the organization, like so much so that I'm pretty sure they still don't remember my name.
Brad like, did though. Brad.
I'm expecting myself to show up to spring training and they'll be like, "Oh, what's going on, Jeff?" Because they just see the Decker on the back of my jersey. And I'm like, how's it going? I mean, I'm just basically like conning my way to keep him stay in the organization before someone realizes that's Cody. He's still here.
Yeah, now you had the better year of the Deckers in the organization. So,
well, I'm the cuter one. So,
and that's the thing is maybe we were confusing you and Jeff in those days. Maybe that was my problem.
That definitely wasn't the case. But by the way, just for the record, before you get off this great, nice interview with me and start mentioning that I'm overweight and horrible again, I'm actually in very good shape.
Yeah, you were doing steps.
Yeah, I just finished steps. But for the record, like I'm the first to admit, acknowledge, I look terrible in uniform. I don't know why I look so bad in a uniform, but I look bad in a uniform. It's scary to me. So it's funny when I ever like talk to my coaches, like we had a coach, Matt Martin for Team Israel, and I finished hitting and he just kind of, I hit like a line drive home run over the center field wall and he like patted me on the shoulders. Like, you're really solid. I'm like, I know. I'm aware of that. He's like, no, it's hard to tell. I'm like, I know. Isn't that horrible? And, apparently a scout, I was friends with my hitting coach, Tom Tornacosta, season, came up to him and was like, "What's McDecker? Just a terrible body, huh?" And my hitting coach just lost it laughing. He's like, "No, he's in very good shape. He just looks bad in the uniform." but he made sure he mentioned that I was fat every day from the rest of that season. He's like, "It's not just me that thinks you're fat, Deck. Even the scouts think it."
They do. They absolutely do. Because I'd never seen you play except for with UCLA in Supers and then this weekend.
It's funny.
It's TV adds 15 pounds, so, or for Baseball America, 60, like you said. So.
Yeah, 60 for you guys.
And now you've got, and now you'll have a big league teammate on Tuesday with Adam Greenberg going up to the big leagues with the Marlins. That's pretty cool.
I'm so excited for that. One of the nicest, genuine guys you could ever meet. Really great guy and it's been a tragic story. And I just hope he gets up there and has a blast and gets a knock and, has fun. He deserves it. Like, honestly, he barely played in this last tournament and didn't bat an eye about it. Just, he was so happy to be on the team, so happy to be around, and we were stoked to be around him. He's really a guy that I'm really glad I got to know. Yeah. I mean, I can't say enough good things about him and this whole experience.
Well, Team Israel, you guys represented well. I thought, I thought that championship game was just a great game. The Cuban Mafia, as Adrian Nieto tweeted, the catcher for Spain. I mean, they have 11 Cuban players, I think, on that team. It seemed like that wound up being the difference. Morlan and then Sanchez, their shortstop. That was exciting, and I'm sorry for you guys that you don't get a chance to move on to that next round. That would have been pretty neat to be able to be a part of. But
it's funny, actually, I didn't even know it was like a modified double. I thought it was just a straight double elimination up until like game two of the whole series.
Yeah, the format, you know, I've gotten a lot of questions on Twitter about that. The only reason I can think of, I never even asked MLB International why it was modified like that. Usually when you have a one-game championship like that, it's for TV. But, these games weren't exactly broadcast to a giant audience. I mean, you guys' game, the championship game was tape delayed on MLB Network. I think the real issue is that, your contract belongs to the Padres. If your pitcher's Josh Zide, belongs to the Astros. So I think when it's international baseball and the players are kind of the quote-unquote property of these major league organizations, I think the major league organizations always want to limit the exposure of their players being used by wearing other people's uniforms, especially the pitchers.
Sorry.
I think that's why it happens. But it's still,
it's difficult. They, you know, you guys went 2-1, Spain went 3-1, and they get to go. You guys split two games. You know, I always think back to 1998 College World Series. Arizona State won its first three games. Southern Cal went 4-1. They played for the championship game. It was 21-14. USC won, and you know, Arizona State barely. You know, they've been there for four games and they're done. And they only got that one shot at it. So college baseball figured it out. Now Major League Baseball actually has this one game playoff with the wild cards, and you guys had that in the World Baseball Classic. So it's strange to see that one game kind of taking hold. But Cody,
it definitely added something different.
Pardon me?
It definitely added a lot of it. I mean, it added a little more intensity. It's a great experience. It was just literally, I'm not in any way complaining about it. I literally just didn't know
right.
That was what it was.
But like you said, the intensity of that game, to me, that's the appeal. And I don't think you have to have major leaguers for international baseball to be exciting because of that intensity. And like you said, I mean, it was like a college level intensity, but with AA, AAA caliber players.
Mm-hmm. It was really. I can't. I mean, it almost sounds like I'm schmoozing, but really, I mean, I couldn't say enough positive things about that experience. Maybe the best, one of the best baseball experiences I've ever had, and I was sorry to see it end.
Well, this was definitely one of our best podcast experiences. It's our first time in a long time we've had a player guest, and
you're welcome.
And I really appreciate having you on, and we need to have you on again when you get to the big league, so you and Dirk Hayhurst could be the former Padre farmhands who made it to the major leagues when Baseball America had never written anything nice about you.
Hey, you know, that'd be great. I mean, I'm just glad we got to the bottom of our beef, and I'm still not really sure what it is, but it's cool.
Well, apologize to your mom for me. How about that?
Oh, she's not going to accept it. she hates you with a fire.
Well, that's I'm glad that motivates her going forward. So,
I mean, I can't even put into words the hatred for you guys that she has. It's something like even – like Shakespeare would have trouble putting into
even Dirk Hayhurst would have trouble putting it into words.
No, Dirk would just sit around and just like, I don't know, throw a couple of profanities around and then a Breaking Bad reference.
That's right.
That only seven of us would get.
He's got a pretty above average bitterness tool though. I mean, he has fun with it, but he has plus bitterness. He might even have seven straight bitterness. So.
Yeah, but truth, that's almost some of the most fun things to joke about. Like I love reading negative things about me because it's really the funniest things to talk about.
Right, right.
I used to have my ego used to be able to get really affected by it, but really, it doesn't bother me one bit anymore. I love it. I think it's funny.
Well, I think we can all agree the root of this is Gavin Brooks. If Gavin Brooks had had a better junior year, none of this would, all would have turned out differently.
I refuse to get on this bandwagon of yours of trying to blame different ones for my teammates. They're all great players and great guys.
Tim Murphy. I'm trying to think who else I can blame. Gabe Cohen. I've already blamed Cohen, Crawford to a certain extent.
What did Crawford do?
I don't know. He didn't hit enough. I don't know.
Oh,
I'll put it on Aaron Fitt for ranking you guys number one in the first place.
You know what? I'm blaming you. It's your fault.
I'm just going to wear it. All right, Cody.
Yeah,
hey, great stuff. And good luck this offseason. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
it's been a lot of fun doing
All right.
It.
Take it easy.